This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Buffy St. Marie has been singing and performing for more than 50 years, part of the early coffeehouse scene of the 1960s. She's a prolific songwriter who's as comfortable writing a beautiful love song as a protest song. Her music has been covered by Elvis, Janis Joplin, Chet Atkins, Courtney Love, and many other artists. She was an early computer adopter and experimenter with electronic music. Her new album, Power in the Blood, on the True North True North Records label, shows off her eclectic musical styles, her rich and expressive voice, and her compelling approach to storytelling. Here's the first cut, It's My Way, that was featured on her first album back in 1964. Let's listen.
Cutting my own way through my own day, and all I dare say is it's my own. I got my own seeds, I got my own weeds, I got my own harvest that I've sown. Now I can tell you things I've done, and I can sing you songs I've sung. But there's one thing I can't give, I and I alone can live. The years I've known and the life I've grown, I got a way I'm going, and it's my way. I get my own story in my own game, I got my own name, and it's my way. I got my own wrong, I got my own right, I got my own fight, and it's my way. I got my own peace, I got my own wrath, I got my own path that only I can go.
It's My Way from Buffy St. Marie's new album, Power in the Blood. She joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. A great pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times. And man, you sound good.
Thank you, Marty.
Your voice is so wonderfully rich and expressive.
I guess eventually you learn something, huh?
It's not the voice that I remembered 50 years ago as I grew up listening to you. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I first started singing, I didn't think I was going to last at all, you know. I just wanted people to hear the songs because I thought the songs had something to say to people. So I was kind of making glorified demos. And over the years, I've just gotten a lot more. I just listened to how I'm singing. You know, I started that about record number two. I think things improved.
But interestingly, this is a song, It's My Way, that was featured on your debut album back in 1964.
Yeah, it was the title track. The album was called It's My Way. That, you know, that album got me named Billboard's Best New Artist. And that was the year the Beatles came to America. So go figure.
You have this new album, Power in the Blood. We're going to play the title song. Mm-hmm. What does that title mean to you?
Well, it means two things, really. I mean, when we think of the word power, a lot of us think of the power of the feudal system and the racketeers who've been oppressing us all since probably before the Old Testament, right? That kind of power, that oppressive power. But what about the power in our own DNA, the power in our own hearts, the power in our own brains to see things through, to overcome things, to actually steer the boat once we put a politician into it, right, so that things don't go astray? So Power in the Blood is about GMOs. It's about fracking. It's about weaponizing pesticides. It's about the military. It says young soldiers drive in tanks, but old thieves, they drive the banks, and you never see a uniform on Wall Street. There's power in the blood. So There's a lot of ways to take that.
Indeed. And what's interesting is the song was, I guess, originally written by the group The Alabama Three. And I should say to our listeners, they wrote the theme song to the HBO series The Sopranos.
You betcha. Woke up this morning.
That was a great way to start that incredible series. But how do you know this group, or how have you collaborated with them?
I found out last year when we were touring in Europe that they were big fans of mine. And I just went over the moon because I'm a big fan of Alabama 3. But their song, their original song, Power in the Blood, it was real violent. It's about the blood on the sword and cut your limb from limb and destroy your kith and kin. It's real bloody and violent. And they say, and when that call it comes, I will be ready for war. And I told them, oh, God, this would make a great peace song. They said, what? So I changed the words. I say, and when that call it comes, I will say no, no, no to war. Ah. So it's really a different take, but we're all real happy with it.
Well, let's give it a listen. And this is Power in the Blood. It's the title track from Buffy St. Marie's brand new album. Let's give it a listen.
Power in the blood. Power in the blood. Power in the blood. Power in the blood. Power in the blood.
No time for spin doctors, medicine, corporation, government selling me some cover up. Weaponizing pesticides, poison in my groceries. Nothing but another drug, a license they can buy and sell.
No, I don't mind dying. I don't mind dying. I don't mind dying. But when that card comes, I will say no, no, no to war.
Again, Power in the Blood. That's the title track from Buffy St. Marie's new album. And she is our guest in this hour of Radio Times. This is obviously an album created in a studio, and one can hear all the interesting computer effects. And I know from reading a bit about you, you were kind of an early adopter when it came to this stuff.
I was a little too early, Marty.
too early adopter.
In the 1960s, I came out with this album called Illuminations, which is real electronic, and I used Buchlas and all kinds of synthesizers. It was really electronic music that was it was not really welcome in the folk community. They just held their noses, right? But electronic music students and art students loved it. And a few years ago, Wired magazine named it one of the 100 albums that set the world on fire, so it was a little early. Then in the 70s, I took that technology to movie scoring, scored a bunch of movies, and right. In the 80s, I got real happy when a Macintosh first came out, and I started doing a lot of electronic music at home, and a lot of digital paintings, and so I was really lucky enough to come upon computers as a recording instrument for my brush strokes or my music or whatever, and I taught computers to a lot of artists in a lot of colleges, and at first they didn't want to know, and then they understood, oh, this is just another tool. Ah, so just like a guitar does not replace a piano, and a piano does not replace the human voice, neither does a computer. You know, it's still about what's in the head of the artist.
Well, I should say that at the end of the show, we're going to play a selection from Illuminations. And the quote from Wired, even better than what you said, calling Illuminations among its 100 albums that set the world on fire while no one was listening.
That's how it is sometimes. You've got to be patient till the ears wake up.
But for you, it just opened up all these possibilities. And I, you know, having been a kind of a folky myself, there was a kind of purist and even maybe puritanical part of the folky music scene, don't you think?
I never heard it put that way. That's perfect. Yeah, there was. You know, the folk police were around. And but actually, to be serious about that, I was lucky enough as a songwriter to come up at a time when there were real folk artists around, like Pete Seeger and Joan Baez, who were singing songs that were 400 years old.
Right.
And as a writer, this informed me as you can write songs that will be appreciated for generations if it's a universal theme that everybody shares, because people take care of songs the way they would take care of an antique chair for generations, because people continue to love it. So that was really nice. So although I was doing electronic music very early and doing rock and blues and country music,
covered the gamut there.
I did, yeah. And although there were momentary puritanical attitudes, especially when I was invited by Chet Atkins to go to Nashville. A lot of people in New York said, oh, why are you going to play with those rednecks? But that's not how it was. So things have changed a lot. And I've always continued to, on every single album, this is my 18th album. Wow. And every single one of them has been really, really diverse in styles, because that's just how I hear it.
And I'm curious about, even because you are a prolific writer, is there an approach that you have? Are you just sort of always ready to write a song? Do you overhear conversations and you think, oh, that would be a good line?
That's a good idea.
do you have an approach, or
no,
you just let it happen?
I don't have one, no. I'm kind of like the same 3-year-old who discovered the piano and said, this is play. I never got into the work side of it until I got to college. So I've written songs all my life about anything and everything, just kind of like snapshots that pop into my head, or conversations that come into my mind. It's kind of like if you go to sleep at night, you don't know if you're going to have a dream, and you sure don't know what it's going to be about. So I'm just very lucky like that. But in some songs, like rewriting Power in the Blood, or rewriting Sing Our Own Song, which you started with, or Universal Soldier, or Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, then I'm kind of like a college girl I was when I graduated from the University of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And I had a degree in philosophy and a degree in teaching, and then went into what was being called the folk scene. So for songs like that, I kind of pretend like I'm trying to write a thesis for a professor who doesn't like me and doesn't want me to choose the theme that I've chosen.
Oh.
So in 3 minutes, kind of like my Sesame Street future that was to come.
Yes.
In 3 minutes, a songwriter gets to really make a point. If you can be succinct about it, I think it's more effective than it would be if you wrote a 400-page book that winds up on the shelf. Songwriting is very, very immediate, and sometimes it's like journalism.
Oh, interesting. I want to pick up on all of that. We're almost up in a break here. Do you still feel like a 3.5-year-old?
I do, exactly. I still do it the same way, and I still have just as much fun. It's play.
And that's Buffy St. Marie, our guest in this hour of Radio Time. She's got a brand new album. It's called Power in the Blood on True North Records. I got that right. And we're playing selections from her new CD. We're going to play some of her older songs as well and continue our conversation after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. If you're just joining us, our guest is singer-songwriter Buffy St. Marie, and she has put out almost 20 albums. She's got a brand new one called Power in the Blood on True North Records, and we've been playing some selections from the new CD. I'm going to have you set up this next one. This is a lullaby.
Kind of a lullaby for your baby, for your family, for your nation, for your culture. And it's a Cree title. It says Kesagi Tinawasis, which means I love you, baby, in Cree.
Let's give it a listen.
First you look into his eyes, soon you're singing lullabies. Hey, ha, hee, ha, 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 ha
like a stranger. He's more like a vision you'd seen. The kind of a face that you'd see on the edge of a dream. He was beaded and feathered from his head to his moccasin feet.
Again, another selection from Buffy St. Marie's new album, Power in the Blood. Talk about sort of diversity of styles, but also your voice. It's very different sounding in that song. It's a lullaby, obviously.
Yeah. You know, you never think about it if you're not a singer, but you talk to people and your pets and yourself in a lot of different voices, and I think that's how it is for a singer. I mean, you know, the 60s was very exciting in that there was so much different, diverse world music around. And now it's like that again with the internet. But in between, everything got kind of genrefied and corporatized and record businessized. And so that people could, everything got, needed to be put into a bin in a record store. And albums seemed to be trying for consistency so that every song would sound like the next one. But as for me, I just never went along with that. And a lot of songwriters write a lot of different styles, and I always have, and this album's like that too. A lot of different styles, voices, points of view, because I'm lucky enough to have these show business airplane tickets that really allow me not only to be a community person in my own community, where KKCR carries NPR, but also a global person. So you kind of get to hear, you're informed in a different way when you're with a lot of different kinds of people.
And you've been on a whirlwind tour. You described your itinerary to me before we began.
Oh, I'm telling you. When I made Running for the Drum, which is my last album about 6 years ago, I told my band, I'd put together an all-Aboriginal band in Winnipeg, Canada, and I told them we were going on a two-year tour, and this is like year six. And all the time that we were touring, I was playing a lot of the songs that have shown up on Power in the Blood. So when True North came and asked me, did I feel like recording, we were ready.
Have you always been a singer? I mean, even as a little girl, was it clear that you had a future in singing?
No, I was never a singer, not even my first few years in show business. No, I've always been a writer. I've always loved music. I kind of just discovered the piano, and it became my best friend at about age three. I've always made visual art and music, and I still dance. I still do ballet and flamenco, and don't do that. It's like joining the army.
It's hard work.
It is. It's hard work. But no, the arts have always been very easy. They've always come very easy to me, and I've always enjoyed the work that goes along with making yourself happier and happier with it.
You know, I remember early on when I first heard you sing, and you had this interesting, I don't know if it's a tremolo or vibrato, it was just a very distinct sound, and Joni Mitchell sort of had the same thing, and one wondered, these Canadian-born singers, whether there was something about being born in Canada that had that effect on someone's voice.
I don't think so. Joni was a big fan of mine, and the first time that she ever got out of town was to come and hear me at the Mariposa Festival. And I heard her, and I thought she was great. I thought she was beautiful, very talented, and a wonderful writer. So I carried her tape around in my purse for a long time. I played it for everybody trying to get her a deal. And finally, I played it for a guy who was in my agent's office, Elliot Robertson. Of course, he went out and made a huge career with Joni. So she credits me with having given her that entrance into show business.
Do you remember your first sort of coffee house concert?
Oh, yes. I used to sing off campus at the University of Massachusetts at a little coffee house called the Saladin. And then when I came to New York just to try my luck at singing, I thought See, I graduated from UMass with a degree in Oriental philosophy. I thought I was going to India to continue studying, but I kind of all of a sudden had a career. I got real lucky real quick. Bob Dylan heard me play at the at Gertie's Folk City in the village, and he suggested I go over to the Gaslight and talk to Sam Hood. And my career kind of started right out of the Gaslight Coffee House in New York.
Were you ready for it? Or it sounds like you hadn't been planning for it.
I hadn't been planning for it. I kind of just went from day to day, and all of a sudden I had bus tickets, and I got to go to Florida in February, and that was pretty good. I think, oh, yeah, this is for me.
You were adopted by a couple in Massachusetts. That's mm-hmm. how you ended up in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Were they musically inclined?
A little bit. My dad's family was, yeah. My mom's family was, I grew up believing that she was part Mi'kmaq, Mi'kmaq, as we say now. But she didn't know a whole lot. And the nice thing that she did to me about that, in the first place, she gave me a taste for education, reading and writing. And she never shut me up when I was making music or pictures or something. But she also told me that what I would learn about American Indian people in the movies and books was likely to be wrong. And when I grew up, if I wanted to find out, I could find out. And it has been my pleasure to do that.
And I do want to talk about that. I also do want to play another selection from your new album, Power in the Blood. This is a song called Farm in the Middle of Nowhere.
Oh.
And talk about, you know, a different sounding Buffy St. Marie.
It is, yeah. It's a true song. It's just a song I found in my guitar sitting around the house in Hawaii. And I do live in a farm in the middle of nowhere. I live on a farm with a whole bunch of goats, an awful lot of chickens, too many wild pigs, a kitty cat, and a wonderful horse.
And how come too many wild pigs?
Oh, they're very naughty.
Are they?
Oh, no, they're dangerous. That's a whole other conversation. Yeah.
Well, let's give it a listen. This is a Farm in the Middle of Nowhere. And again, our guest, Buffy St. Marie's new album is called Power in the Blood.
Say the one I love, he loves me. He lovey loving loves me. It's a beautiful day where I come from. Top of the world, nowhere town. I fell in love and then I settled down. And the one I love, he loves me. He lovey loving loves me. Sunshine shining in my heart. Dream, dream, look at the night. And sweet old brown eyes hold me tight. And the one I love, he loves me. He lovey love, he loves me. End of the rainbow in my backyard.
And again, Farm in the Middle of Nowhere from Buffy St. Marie's new album, Power in the Blood. She is our guest in this hour of Radio Times. To join the conversation, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Do you enjoy working in the studio? Do you enjoy that part of
it? At first you do. Oh, boy, some of those hours are very long. Yeah. No, I do. In general, I do. I'm kind of a different show business person. I've kind of had a career on the periphery of show business. I got rich and famous real quick. I moved to Hawaii. I started a scholarship foundation. I continued to record in the 70s. My son was born. And I joined the cast of Sesame Street for 5 years. You know, I really couldn't get any airplay during the Johnson and Nixon administration. So I started doing other things with the same talents that I had. Mm. So I worked on Sesame Street for a long time. And I would go in and out of recording. And I record when I feel like touring. And that's a real different way for artists to do.
Because you get into kind of a mindset.
Yeah, anyway. And like this time, I had all these songs. I was doing them on the road all the time. People were saying, where can we get this music? So we made a record, and I have a great band, and we're touring all over the world. We've been in Australia. I just made a trip from Hawaii to Australia to Hong Kong to Wales to Scotland to England, Ireland. And we were touring. We were doing arena shows with Morrissey.
Ah.
Yeah, that was interesting, yeah. And then we're back on the road again across Canada and throughout the East Coast of the U.S. Then I'll go home for a couple of weeks and we'll go out again. It's a lot of fun.
Let me play another selection. In fact, this is one that you wanted to make sure that we played from your new album, Power in the Blood. This is Not the Lovin' Kind.
Hey.
Shall we just listen to it and then we can talk about it?
Sure.
Let's do that. Another song from Buffy St. Marie's new album, Power in the Blood, Not the Lovin' Kind. But that's also a song that you have sung for years and was on a, what, previous album?
Yeah, I recorded this. I recorded it for the first time with Norbert Putnam and the Area Code 615 band in Nashville.
Oh, wow.
Oh, they were a hot band. They were great. We toured together a little bit and it was wonderful. But, you know, it was during the time when I couldn't get any airplay that media has since labeled the blacklist years. And so when we do it live, you know, people are saying, where can we get that? So we stuck it on this album.
I want to talk about your blacklist years. As you said, this is what the media called it. But you learned, I guess, over time or maybe even more recently that under the Johnson administration, the Nixon administration, you were kind of you were on people's lists.
Well, so it seems. I mean, I didn't believe it at first. It was like 20 years later, a radio broadcaster in Canada apologized to me for having been part of a group of people who thought my music ought to be suppressed. You know, Universal Soldier during the Johnson years and all my, you know, Native American issue songs like Now the Buffalo's Gone, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, things like that that were going on during the American Indian Movement days.
Yes.
They just did not want me communicating with the public. And I had no idea this was going on. And when the guy told me that on the radio, I mentioned it to my lawyer, and he said, well, let's get your FBI files. And I said, there's no FBI files on me. I mean, you know, it's not like I, you know, have
done
parking tickets or something.
Right.
I have totally clear record. But if you wrote to the FBI, and they have letters from people who did, asking, does Buffy St. Marie have a file? They'd say, we can't tell you what's in it, but yes, she does. She's under surveillance. So, I mean, what crap is that? So the FBI told my lawyer, sure, she can come to D.C. to our offices and we'll show her the files. And my lawyer said, no, you guys can be invited to my office and she'll look at the files here. So that's what we did. And sure enough, there they were.
What were your FBI files?
It goes pages and pages and pages, and so much of it has been redacted, so just crossed out with big fat magic markers. You don't learn anything except that you're under surveillance, and that's all you find out.
Wow.
So I had committed no crime, so there was nothing on me.
And when you said this DJ was told not to play your music, was it from his bosses or was it coming from higher than that?
Well, apparently, when he told me, I was so surprised. I kind of didn't even believe it. He told me that he had letters on White House stationery, and the quote was, he was being thanked for suppressing music that deserved to be suppressed. But I wasn't the only one. Eartha Kitt and Taj Mahal were in the same boat.
Wow.
They're the only two that I know personally who the same thing happened to. But who would think that? I mean, I didn't think I was important enough. So anyway, what bothers me is not that, you didn't have a bigger career. No, it's not that. It's that I was saying things that I thought might help to make changes in the U.S. regarding the treatment of Native American people and add support to the anti-war effort. So, these things do happen. But people say, well, doesn't that make you hate the U.S. government? And I say, absolutely not. There's an administration, a handful of guys, who get elected for 4 years, and they do what they want to do. And it's not as though they had an act of Congress passed against me. No, some guy goes in the back room and makes nasty phone calls to the networks and his friends in media. And all of a sudden, when I'm invited to the Tonight Show, I find out, I'm not supposed to talk about Universal Soldier or Native American issues, just make celebrity chat and do until it's time for you to go, which, Elvis and Barbara Streisand and everybody were recording.
Did that hurt your career, though, as you kind of look back at that time?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, it drowned me.
You can't get airplay, right?
Oh, sure. In show business, if they hold you underwater for 4 minutes, you're dead for a long time. Careers don't usually resuscitate. So I kind of disappeared from the American airwaves. And I think that most of my fans probably think that I just got tired of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, all I thought was that singers come and singers go. But I continued to have a real nice career for the rest of the world. So I was pretty happy. And it never occurred to me that had been going on here.
Well, we're going to take another short break and then get back to our conversation talking with Buffy St. Marie. We've been playing selections from her new album, her new CD called Power in the Blood. We have some of her other songs queued up as well. In fact, we have Universal Soldier. She just mentioned that. That was a song that was included on her debut album, and it was a song about, in many ways, about war and a song obviously critical of war as well. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us much more after a very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're just joining us, Buffy St. Marie is our guest. She has been singing and performing for more than 50 years, and she has been touring the country. She's also just put out a new album called Power in the Blood on True North Records, and we've been playing selections from that. I do want to play just a section of Universal Soldier. This is from Buffy St. Marie's actually debut album, It's My Way, from 1964. Let's give it a listen.
He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan. And he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for...
And again, Universal Soldier, performed by Buffy St. Marie from an album back in 1964. You think this is one of the songs that got you in trouble, so to speak?
I think what got me in trouble was not just the content of that kind of song, but also the fact that I was outspoken about things. So I started getting real famous when Elvis Presley and Barbara Streisand and everybody recorded "Until It's Time for You to Go." So all of a sudden, I wasn't just some folky with a big mouth. All of a sudden, I was a folky with a big mouth on national television in a magazine covers. Yeah, so I think really it was my the fact that I was becoming very prominent and my ideas were making sense to a lot of people that got me hushed up.
Kevin Griffin, our engineer, just whispered in my ear saying, "Is Buffy St. Marie a religious person?"
I am. You know, just from the very beginning. Just the idea of we're made in the image of the Creator really rang a bell with me from time to time when I would hear it, because that's how I was from the time that my earliest remembrance. So if we're made in the image of the Creator, that's our green light for creativity. So that's my religion. It has to do with the creation, the sacredness of the creation, of the Creator, and of the creativity in every single one of us. So that's what I'm always looking for in myself and other people, trying to encourage that.
Do you have rituals around that?
No.
Or is this something that you sort of live it, believe it, feel it?
Yeah, it just inspires me all the time. You know, you breathe in, you breathe out, you're here. How amazing. No rituals, no churches, although, as I said, my major in college was Oriental philosophy and religion, because I was so much interested in everybody's relationship to the Creator. It's just a thrill for me.
Let me see what some of our callers have to say. We have Karen from Doylestown joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Karen. Go ahead. You're on the air.
About 45 years ago, when I had children who were watching Sesame Street and Buffy was on, she had a son named Cody Starblanket Wolfchild. I thought it was the most beautiful name I had ever heard, and I still do, and I just wonder how he's doing.
And this is a question from Karen. She wanted to know about your child, Cody Starblanket Wolfchild, how he's doing.
He's doing real good. My son is now in his 30s.
Wow.
He just built himself a treehouse.
He
lives in Hawaii,
lives?
And he's my neighbor. Yeah, and he's a musician. Thank you for asking.
Living in a treehouse.
Yeah. And his name is Dakota Starblanket Wolfchild, which Big Bird said is a stuck-up name. And we've been laughing ever since.
Well, and he's the child you nursed on Sesame Street, yes?
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
I think I may have been the first person to nurse a child on global television. We reached 73 countries of the world 3 times a day with those wonderful, very brief, quick attention span clips in Sesame Street. And that particular one dealing with breastfeeding not only was helpful to La Leche League when they were trying to spread their wonderful message, but also it gets put up on YouTube and then somebody takes it down. Somebody puts it up and somebody takes it down.
Even today, right?
Yeah.
My goodness.
No, that was a good one.
You had mentioned Until It's Time for You to Go. This is a song you wrote back in the mid-60s on your 1965 album, Many a Mile, as you mentioned, made famous by a number of other singers, Elvis Presley being one, right?
Yeah. I think Bobby Darin was the first one to record it aside from myself. He heard it on my album and loved it. And Bobby Darin was coming off hits like Splish Splash, I Was Taking a Bath, and Mac the Knife, a real Vegas singer. Then Sonny and Cher recorded it, and Barbara Streisand recorded it, Elvis Presley recorded it, Neil Diamond recorded it.
Wow.
Roberta Flack recorded it, Chet Atkins recorded it, Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops Orchestra recorded it. So a lot of people liked this song, and that's such an incredible compliment to a writer that other people would take it into their lives.
Were you surprised
totally.
That so many people wanted to cover your song?
Totally, because I didn't even used to admit that I wrote it.
Were you not proud of it?
Oh, no, I loved it. And I put it in the middle of my set, but the folk police were quite strict about songs that sounded like pop music. For some reason, they didn't take to that one, but a lot of people did. So it was good for me because it made me enough money to afford to be in show business, because show business is expensive.
To pay for all those trips, right?
All those airplane tickets and all those people in your band and those people in your agency, yeah.
I like the idea of the folk music police. They can be very strict. Well, let's give a listen. This is Until It's Time for You to Go, performed by our guest who happened to write the song, Buffy St. Marie.
You're not a dream. You're not an angel. You're a man. I'm not a queen. I'm a woman. Take my hand. We'll make a space in the lives that we'd planned. And here we'll stay until it's time for you to go. Yes, we're different, worlds apart, we're not the same. We laughed and played at the start, like in a game. You could have stayed outside my heart, but in you came. And here you'll stay until it's time for you to go.
And again, that's Buffy St. Marie singing Until It's Time For You To Go, a song that was covered by many people, as she just described to us. You also wrote Up Where We Belong, and that was, what, Joe Cocker, Jennifer Warnes? That was an Officer and a Gentleman, right?
Yeah, that's, I found that song on my piano one day, that melody and that bridge. And Jack Nitzsche was scoring An Officer and a Gentleman, and he didn't have a theme song, so he asked if I'd been writing anything, and I sang da 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 da. And Joe
and
Cocker,
he said, "I'll take it."
Yeah, and so Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes went out and won an Academy Award for me. I didn't even have to sing it, so many thanks to them.
Indeed. Let me get to, it looks like Deirdre from Glenside to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Deirdre. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Sure.
First, a compliment. I love the way that, Buffy, that you sing Time For You To Go, Until It's Time For You To Go, because you don't put any sentimentality to it. You're just, your voice is clear, and I think the lyrics come through.
Thanks.
And I also had a question. I'm a singer, and how do you sing a song that has so much depth of emotion that you've written without getting emotional? It's always seemed to me like I've been amazed that you're singing, folk singing, Joni Mitchell, those kind of songs. How can people sing lyrics that are so true and heartfelt that you've written and not get emotional while you're performing?
I do get emotional, and sometimes when I get real emotional, that's when a lot of vibrato and tremolo that you mentioned comes through. But you know, as a singer myself, I'm really about the song. I think probably Joni is too. Joni Mitchell. Yeah. I do get emotional, but I think it's a matter of when you're concentrating on the song instead of the singer and on the message instead of the voice, you kind of don't pay attention, and it almost comes out like speaking. Because you're thinking about the text and the meaning of the words. So that's about the best I can do at explaining it. But I get real emotional about a lot of my songs.
Are there things you do before you prepare for a concert?
Nothing. Everybody says, me, 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 me.
You do nothing?
I need my honey and lemon. No. And if you go to a powwow, I mean, powwow singers don't do no warming up, and they sing, you know, 12 hours straight. And, I don't do anything special.
So you don't do anything to kind of, quote unquote, take care of your voice?
I just show up.
Well, sometimes that takes a lot of energy, doesn't it? Just to show up.
Show up and press the right button.
Let me get Jose from, looks like Burlington County, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Jose. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for being there. You're a real artist rather than just a performer. But I'd like to ask you, the repercussions of what the government did to you, or the effects of that, of the 60s, do you think that is still alive and affecting a lot of performers today and keeping them away from messages through this giant megaphone that they have?
Hmm. Thanks, Jose. What do you think?
Well, I couldn't tell you statistically or for sure, but I expect it is, because that's how corporations work. To them, it's just competition. They shut you up because you're going against their message. And I don't think it is the government. I think it's a bunch of nasty little guys, and they show up in government and they show up in...
Do you think it's just guys?
I couldn't tell you. I think mostly it is. I think mostly it is guys. But because they're usually the power behind the throne, whoever is the face of the moment. But I just think it's a corporate attitude. I think it's an old-fashioned attitude. I think it's an obsolete attitude. I think it's something that the human race eventually grows out of, but we're not there yet. I just have a theory about people, individuals, countries, cultures, and the human race in general. I just think we're all ripening. Each one of us, even that guy down the street that you don't like, you know, he's getting better every day too. But we don't do it all at the same rate. We're not all in the same place at the same time. But yeah, I think that attitude is around, and I think there's always going to be people who go in the back room and badmouth somebody, and they won't think anything of it. They'll just think it's business. But business, which might at the moment be, as Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont says, the business model of the moment is fraud. You know, there's a lot of racketeering going on right now, and it's been around for a long time, and every now and then it's louder and more obvious. I hope that helps.
Jose, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. But it doesn't seem, I mean, at this point in your career, nothing's going to shut you up, right?
Like Power in the Blood, it talks about some real issues of the moment. And they are weaponizing pesticides. And I do live in Hawaii, and there are GMOs being sprayed around hospitals and schoolyards. And we did pass a bill where I live for transparency, so that we would know what the GMO companies are spraying, when they're spraying it, how much they're spraying, and what it does. I mean, we have kids hemorrhaging in the emergency rooms, and the doctors don't know what they've been exposed to. And so we passed that bill, and now they're suing us. Doesn't mean they're going to succeed, but they can out-lawyer and out-money us, maybe. These are contemporary issues. They're contemporary challenges, and we will survive them. But, you know, it's kind of uphill while you're doing it.
I hear you. I do want to play one more song, and this is actually, you referenced this album, Illuminations, that didn't do so well. And this is from your 1969 album. It's a song called God is Alive, Magic is Afoot, featuring words by Leonard Cohen. Do I have that correctly?
Yeah.
But it's really an extraordinary song, and I have to say, one I wasn't familiar with, and I want to make sure our listeners have a chance to hear it. Let's give it a listen.
Thank you.
God is alive. Magic is afoot. God is alive. Magic is afoot. God is afoot. Magic is alive. Life is afoot. Magic never dies. God never sickened. Many poor men lied. Many sick men lied. Magic never weakened. Magic never hid. Magic always ruled. God is afoot. God never died. God was ruler, though his funeral lengthened, though his mourners thickened. Magic never fled. Though his shrouds were hoisted, the naked God did live. Though his words were twisted, the naked magic thrived. Though his death was published round and round the world, the heart did not believe.
And again, God is alive, magic is afoot. I mean, that's just fantastic.
Thanks, thank you. Thank you, Leonard Cohen.
Do you like listening to yourself?
Oh, sometimes. Sing. I like that song. No, some of them I don't like at all.
No?
No, I mean, I like the songs, but some, you know, when you're a young singer and have absolutely no clout, I felt that Vanguard Records took the outtakes instead, and I think they thought I wasn't going to last. I think somehow they thought I was a junkie or something. And I don't think that they thought I was going to last, and I think the way that they liked to portray me was kind of as a very, you know, maybe on the edge, sad person, which I wasn't. So I think they took a lot of outtakes. You should have heard the good ones.
The good stuff. Is yeah. that some in a vault somewhere?
Or who knows? I don't know. Those old tapes, they're probably all rusty.
I read that you're rewriting the lyrics to My Country, 'Tis of Thy People Are Dying.
Yeah. How did you know that? Yeah, in Canada.
We did a little research on you.
Oh, well, in Canada, you know, on June 3rd, they're going to issue the finalized version of the Truth and Reconciliation Report. Native American people in Canada, well, in the U.S. too, but in the U.S. we don't talk about it. But in Canada, the lid has been ripped off the horrible, horrible generations of scandals involving children put into residential schools, you know, where there were electric chairs to torture them. There was rape and murder and terrible, terrible things. Now, the Canadian government has since issued apologies and all, but the real report is coming out, and I will be doing that song.
Well, Buffy St. Marie, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
Especially in studio and her new album, Power in the Blood, on True North Records. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can also listen to us on satellite radio. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.